Ken Forrester, Executive Director at Momenta. Welcome to our Digital Thread podcast, produced by, for, and about digital industry leaders. In this series of conversations, we capture insights from the best and brightest minds in digital industry. They're executives, entrepreneurs, advisors, and other thought leaders. What they have in common is, like our team at Momenta, they are deep industry operators. We hope you find these podcasts informative. And as always, we welcome your comments and suggestions. Good day and welcome to episode 218 of our Momenta Digital Thread podcast series. Today, I'm pleased to host Vina Lakunde, Senior Vice President, Strategy and Corporate Development at Rockwell Automation, a $7.7 billion global leader in industrial automation and digital transformation, with more than 28,000 people across 100 countries. Rockwell's subsidiary, Rockstar Ventures, is the anchor limited partner for Momenta's fourth digital venture capital fund. Vina was most recently chief strategy officer of 3M Company, a $32 billion global conglomerate operating in the consumer, safety, and industrial, transportation, electronics, and healthcare markets. Over 28 years with 3M, she ascended to key leadership positions to include Chief Ethics and Compliance Officer, Managing Director of 3M Indonesia, Global Vice President of the Industrial Adhesives and Tapes Division, and Leader of the Technology and Transformation Services Organization, which included information technology, digital strategy, and business transformation. She's a board member of Trinity Industries, Clarity, a leader in OT cybersecurity, and the Rockwell Automation Charitable Contributions Board. A passionate advocate for diversity, equity, and inclusion, Vina serves as the board of Mindependent, a nonprofit focused on STEM K-12 programming in Minnesota. And she is the executive sponsor of several company resource groups. Vina has a bachelor's degree in chemistry and chemical engineering from Western University in Canada. Vina, it's a pleasure to welcome you to our Digital Thread podcast today.
Thank you, Ken. I'm delighted to be here and look forward to the conversation.
As well, this has been a long time coming, and I've been impressed with both your career trajectory, but already the influence and impact that you've had with Rockwell. So this is a very timely discussion. You know, we call this the Digital Thread podcast. So the first question I always like to ask is, what would you consider to be your digital thread? In other words, one or more thematic threads that defined your digital industry journey.
Thanks, Ken. So let me start with kind of how we think about it at Rockwell, and then I'll click down into my own personal journey. So when we think about digital thread at Rockwell, we think about a technology platform that integrates data, systems, processes across the whole value chain. And the purpose of that is to integrate the value chain with digital capabilities to deliver superior outcomes. When I think about the key themes for my digital industry journey, it centers around innovation and thinking about how we start with customer needs in a way that we can combine the operational technology we have, the digital technology we have, and put some innovation into that to deliver outcomes that can help make customers more competitive. So I would say it centers around customers. You know, I've been serving industrial customers for 30 years now through different roles, different lenses, whether it's from a technical lens or a business standpoint. And I'm always seeking to kind of figure out what is the problem that needs to be solved to unlock value for them. And in that process, you know, really listening. And early on, I discovered that being, you know, an anthropologist and having that mindset of observing have really helped me figure out how to bring those capabilities together to help customers. If I think about in my prior company, it was material science focused. And if you think about, we used to think about how to create value by driving quality for customers, whether they were consumables or they were critical things like adhesives that held together aerospace components, and they had to last the life of an airplane under harsh conditions. We started with, how can we help customers with more of that material science solution? But we had to evolve, right? Because what happened was customers said, look, I can't build 100 prototypes of different formulations. So how are you going to share with me what your adhesive can do under different conditions? And that forced us to think differently about how we innovate. And we developed what I would call finite element analysis, which helped us model all the variables in the condition so we could run series of experiments and show customers, here's the top three formulations that we think would work work. So I think at the end of it, spending time with customers in many industries, understanding their problems and helping them find more ways to win is really about like the themes of how I think about digital industry journey. At Rockwell, let me just kind of fast forward. Rockwell's been a very successful company for over 120 years. And it's primarily been through the programmable logic controllers on the factory floor, which collect vast amounts of data, really understanding how we can take that and move up the technology stack to drive software and services that really put people at the center to make really strong business decisions or manufacturing decisions has been a key theme of the work that we're doing now, that I'm doing now.
Wow, that's quite an impressive track record already in discussion. I like the idea of anthropologists. Perhaps we'll just subtitle this industrial anthropologist, because I think that adequately describes what you've done. Of course, I love the fact you started with innovation, because anytime somebody votes on the most innovative companies, 3M is likely to show up right at the top of that list. So I know you had quite a trajectory there from R&D and technical services in 1994 through a steady ascension across sales, marketing, strategic business development, operations, general management, of course, the executive leadership roles we discussed. To what do you attribute your success there, and what are you most proud?
Yeah, you know, Ken, thank you for that. Do some really good reflection upon this. You know, if I think about part of what helped me be successful was being in an environment where you are encouraged to be curious, where you are encouraged to reach out to others to help you in your learning, to collaborate and ideate together, raise your hand for opportunities that may not be in your traditional career path. So as you described, I had different roles. I didn't choose the chemistry, chemical engineering track only, but being an avid problem solver helped me deliver in the roles that I was in and then get the credibility to move to other roles. As long as leaders had, if they had the confidence that you could rise to the task, you were given those opportunities. So I think that that is a very key leadership principle that I have taken forward. I had a broad variety of sponsors that supported and invested in my potential. But I think about what was it that I contributed to this? I think about three things. I think about curiosity, I think about courage, and I think about confidence. So if I click down into curiosity, the ability to ask questions, the ability to have a growth mindset. So, right? So I don't know this yet versus just I don't know. So how do you seek that out? Also seeking out diverse perspectives and being clear that I am not going to have all the answers. So how do I make sure I'm casting my net wide to really understand who could help me with getting the answers to my questions? I would tell you early on, just an anecdote, I went from R&D in the lab to what we called application engineering, where you're going to solve technical problems for customers. And I would get so enamored with how customers would manufacture things, their processes. The sales reps would eventually be like, Vina, we got to go. Like, you know, this is great. We solved the problem. We need to like move on. You can't keep, you know what I mean? So it was interesting, but I had a lot of curiosity. The second part would be courage, and the courage to challenge the status quo, right? Like, so just because things have always been done a certain way doesn't mean, or they didn't work in the past, or speaking kind of the truth when maybe the rest of the team sees it, but nobody's willing to put forward that, hey, we need to confront a different reality. I feel like that's been helpful in helping me, you know, put things on the table, then of course work through problems to deliver solutions. And then confidence, and I don't mean confidence as in arrogance, but confidence in my ability to seek the right team out, get the right help, and deliver outcomes with authenticity. So confidence in being who I am, not trying to be someone else. I think if I'm, say, what am I most proud of so far? It's the leaders that I've developed. I've tried to pay it forward and take that look for potential in people and put them in positions where they can grow, contribute, and develop into stronger leaders. And they're not always the quote-unquote traditional picks for those roles.
You certainly brought some strong traits. I love this curiosity, courage, confidence into your role and your leadership there. Arguably, you were in really good fertile ground in terms of 3M. They've been recognized as an innovation powerhouse. They've been awarded the U.S. government's highest award for innovation, the National Medal of Technology. I've heard many attribute its 60,000 products, including, of course, Scotch, Command, and Post-it notes, to what is called a robust and rich organizational culture and structure that promotes, encourages, and facilitates innovation. What did you see as the key enablers of innovation there?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, some things that I think, but working there for so long, you take for granted, just the collaborative nature of the scientific community. And, you know, we have this periodic table. So, of course, being a chemist, I love periodic tables. Just so you know, my 16-year-old daughter thinks that's weird. But, we had this periodic table of capabilities that were platforms across 3M. And they could be process, they could be material science. And for each one of those, there was an SME in 3M. And so technology was not owned by anybody. It was accessible to all. And it was the combination of those elements in the periodic table that would drive new innovation and new solutions for customers. So that accessibility to that talent and that thought leadership across that periodic table, no matter where you were in the company, was really helpful in driving innovation. And then, of course, there was this historically famous 15% time where people were encouraged to think about innovations and solutions or solve problems that were outside of the scope of their daily objectives. And given the tools and the access and the talent you could tap into, there was a lot of innovation created in that 15% time as well.
Of course, I really wanted to draw out a lot of the 3M experience because I'm genuinely excited about what you are already bringing to Rockwell Automation. So you joined in late 2021 as Chief Strategy and Corporate Development Officer. I'm curious, what attracted you to the company?
Yeah, it's a great question. There's maybe four things I'll talk about. One, Rockwell is more of a pure play industrial automation and digital transformation company. There's a lot to be learned by having a long tenure in a diversified company like 3M, where we had industrial, electronics and energy, we had consumer and healthcare, but really kind of being able to focus and create value in more of a focused way was exciting to me because I wanted to continue to serve industrial manufacturers. I've grown up in understanding their problems, understanding how the world is changing, and really wanting to hone in was one of the reasons. The second reason was the purpose. And so it's funny, you know, can people say, well, you know, it's Gen Z and millennials who love purpose. I'm Gen X. I want to have purpose. I want to work for a company who has a strong purpose. I think that's important for everybody. But when I saw that the purpose of Rockwell Automation was to expand human possibility, that truly got me excited because, you know, some people can think of automation as replacing people. And that's really not the intent. The intent is really about expanding what's possible for humans and using automation, using digital transformation to be able to do that. And so that was exciting for me. The third one was runway for value creation. So when I think about where the world is going and I think about some of the mega trends, obviously there's labor shortage, there's demographic shifts, there's, you know, sustainability, digital, all those things that are happening. The company that I'm now with is really well equipped to kind of grow into the future. It's really going to be more about what choices do we make to create value. So that was exciting to me in terms of a company that, again, has been, you know, successful for 120 years, but willing to disrupt itself to find more ways to win with customers, right? Add services, add software, so that the relevant, being relevant with customers and helping them as they go forward is always the primary goal. And so that for me is exciting because I love disruption, not for disruption's sake, but to create value. And so that was the third one. The fourth one is the culture. So if I think about the culture of Rockwell, there are four cultural tenets that are so simple, but so meaningful. And I thought, with these cultural tenets, I don't have to put effort into coming to work every day, because this is how I operate. So the first one is, you know, on a foundation of integrity, you know, strengthening diversity, equity, and inclusion, and driving sustainability. The second one is all about being willing to consider bring in a steady stream of fresh ideas. So that means looking outside, looking for inspiration in different places and bringing it back in. The third one is being willing to compare ourselves to the best possible alternative. So that is really about, don't compare yourself to yourself. Compare yourself to what's happening outside. And are we continuing to differentiate and move forward? And the fourth one is about improving the speed of decision making. And when I think about that, I think about radical simplification. And I think about decision making closest to where the work is being done. And so those four things I've thought about, that's exactly how I operate. So working for this company is going to be kind of just in line with my values and how I think about the work that needs to be done.
Excellent. Let's talk a little bit about your role. So you're Chief Strategy and Corporate Development Officer. I'm curious, what's your remit, maybe key focus areas, and probably most importantly, how are you weaving some of the industrial innovation experience into Rockwell? And maybe even talk about a couple of your early wins.
Yeah, sure. So when you think about strategy and corporate development, right? So it's really around, how do we think about the next step of the journey for Rockwell? What are the choices we're going to make? What's the playing field that we're going to play on? And how are we going to create differentiated value? You know, if I think about it and get alignment all the way through strategy to execution, right? And if you think about today, we have a publicly available long-term profitable growth framework to outline the levers on a path to 9 billion. And it wasn't the 9 billion, but it was the pace of growth that was important. And so every year the organization rallies around, how are we going to drive that through a mix of perform and transform targets, right? And so we've been through a process of, how are we going to think about the next horizon? What's the process we're going to use? So strategy formulation, standard work, how are we going to align around it? How are we going to measure and track? So operationalize, what do we want to get done in year one? That is a mix of perform and transform priorities. And then how do you course correct? And so I'm very proud that we've kind of brought this strategy to execution lifecycle in to Rockwell. And this is our first year of iteration. And what you'll see at Investor Day in November here in Boston is the outcome of the next leg of our journey. You know, if I think about the corporate development side of our group, it's really taking the strategy. And when you think about build, buy, partner, invest, how do you deliver on the choices you've made? Really thinking about the buy, partner, invest piece of that equation. And so, you know, we have a group that focuses on acquisitions. And if you see, they're aligned with strategic priorities. So our current public framework talks about 1% revenue growth from inorganic activities in the areas of information solutions, connected services, in market expansion in Asia and Europe, Middle East, Africa, and then advanced material handling. And I'm very proud that we have been able to deliver against that for the past, you know, over the past 5 to 7 years. And we continue. So just a month ago, we announced the acquisition of Clearpath Robotics in Canada, which is an autonomous mobile robot company with a research arm that really is about, you know, production logistics. So we think, given our portfolio and how we create value for customers, really tackling the production logistics space is going to be very value add for our customers. Now, I also want to talk about invest, because invest is critical. You know, we've always invested in some venture activity, typically in late stage companies. And, you know, as companies are scaling and they're looking for commercial partnerships, and we see a win-win there. What I'm very proud of is in our team is that we are expanding the aperture to really say, look, we need to have place bets, investment bets across the continuum of life cycle of startups, from pre-seed, seed, stage A, as well as all the way to series D and E. And that's been an area that's been untapped for us. And so I'm very excited that we are now have a kind of scope and what are we going to do there? And part of it, you know, with Rockstar Ventures, as we've named it, is of course working with you and Momenta on the fund that you described. We're really aligning on what are those areas that we want to be sensing, learning more, right? And whether it's to understand, to disrupt ourselves, to kind of challenge our thinking, or to look for future acquisitions. All of those things are critical for us to be successful in the future. We always need to be sensing the landscape through a variety of mechanisms. So I'm very proud about that progress as well.
And we're very proud to count you as an anchor LP in the fund. I often tell people my first true programming experience was in Allen Bradley PLC way back when. And so in some sense, this was coming home for me in terms of able to work with Rockwell. So you clearly have been a long-term pioneer and influencer in this industrial automation space, especially in the U.S. So you talked earlier about megatrends, and clearly manufacturing or industrial automation is at an important crossroads. There's reshoring, the energy transition, manufacturing labor challenges. I'm curious, what are some of the key trends you're watching relative to Rockwell in the future of industry?
Yeah, you know, we kind of theme things in four areas. So one is we'll say, look, the whole world is thinking about digital transformation and artificial intelligence, right? I mean, Ken, I don't think you can listen to an earnings call or anything without counting the number of times someone says artificial intelligence. But what we're thinking about it is, how will it help improve the way work is done, right? So kind of how do we think about what those impacts will have? And, you know, companies and customers are investing heavily because nobody wants to miss out, right? So there's this fear of missing out. Everybody wants to stay competitive. And so we see this kind of acceleration and race to incorporate more digitalization as well as AI to help companies be more competitive. And I think that's only accelerated since the pandemic. And so that's one. The second one is, you know, energy transition and sustainability. And I say energy transition, people often think of that as kind of only renewables or only kind of carbon capture, green hydrogen. Those are really important. But we also work with the oil companies because they have to transition too. So our work is helping our existing oil and gas customers through their transition as well. And we think that that's really important to think about it holistically, right? And so I think that's an area. And we see so much investment, right? Over $2.5 trillion of investments kind of just going into fund energy transition over the next 10 years. The third area is this area of shifting demographics, right? So we talk about labor shortage, or we talk about having to reskill almost 50% of the global factory workforce in the next 5 to 10 years. We think about experienced employees retiring. And the new entrants to the workforce are digital natives. I mean, I think about how they learn, how they interact, and it's very different. So how do we make sure that we are with our own solutions and how we help our customers think differently about how to engage and enable new entrants to the workforce? And then the other one is we think about shifting demographics. Despite short-term or geopolitical concerns, there is going to be a shift of manufacturing even more so to Asia than it is today. If you think about as a percentage from a global landscape. So we think about if 60% of the global manufacturing is going to be in Asia Pacific by 2033, how should we be thinking about our business and supporting our customers in as they shift as well? And then the last area I would talk about is resiliency, right? So if we think about the impact on the global GDP just from the pandemic, right? I mean, there's data that would say decrease the global GDP by 3.5%. All customers, all of us, even us, we're looking at how do we become more resilient. I remember the days of just in time and global, long global supply chains. If you had like low mix, high volume, you just things would be shipping across continents. And I think the rebalancing that's happening right now is going to be about resilience. So maybe it's more regional sources of supply, or in some cases, for critical things, it'll be more national. And you see that in the government stimulus that's coming out across the world. And then I think that this no longer optional. So having kind of backup plans, having multiple sources of supply, these are all must-haves to operate in the new normal. So those are the four areas I would highlight.
You know, the fund we just kicked off is subtitled Industry 5, and of course, based on the EU Commission's focus on the Industry 5 initiative, which they subtitle as resilient, human-centric, and sustainable. And I've heard you mentioned each of those phrases through the conversation. Of course, digital is always associated with productivity in traditional industries, but it is interesting to see how much in what we like to call industrial impact, this is also bringing along relatives, what we call people and planet. So I'm curious, where do you see the largest impact potential, and how is Rockwell Automation enabling its customers and partners to really be leaders in this in their industries?
Yeah, it's a great question. Look, I think the impact of digitalization and digital transformation is really about the democratization of data and enabling people to make higher quality decisions and spend more time on critical thinking than what I would call data collection and crunching or manual manipulation of data. And so I think that that is kind of how we're thinking about it, right? We think prepared people are core to the success of manufacturing in the future. And so that kind of, you know, you think about what does winning look like? It's having highly trained, highly engaged workforce working in concert with advanced technology and automation. And so I think we do see people at the center of it, and we want to see technology give people superpowers. I mentioned this before, that they wouldn't have had before, because they're now spending their time on looking at high quality data to make decisions about what's next. And I'll give you some examples. I mean, our Calypso Consulting Services really does this on a daily basis. And you know, they integrate things like PLM, product lifecycle management, with manufacturing execution systems or MES. So someone formulating products that will then be scaled, if you can connect those two seamlessly, you can see the impact of formulation changes on manufacturing in a way that's very different than when I used to do factory experiments. I'd be doing a design of experiments. It would be all be kind of in Excel or on, you know, with some software, and it would be to some degree trial and error to refine where you wanted to end up. And that's expensive from a time, machine, materials, and people standpoint. And so I just think there's so much more we can do to empower people. The other area I would maybe share with you, Ken, is think about cybersecurity. So industrial manufacturers today have to think about it in such a different way than maybe they ever have before. And being able to connect a manufacturing site with the rest of the company's manufacturing sites, really take all the signals that come in and distill what needs to be reacted to, is actually a real value to many customers, because you can get so many signals from any data that you're kind of overwhelmed. And so we have developed our kind of global cybersecurity operations center that helps customers manage these alerts and really distills, here's where you need to take action. And so I still think people are at the center, maybe is my point, but how can we enable them to really, like we said, expand the possibility of what's possible?
Yeah, I was having another podcast conversation recently, and the gentleman reminded me that mass production can also be production by the masses. It's the same result, yeah. Right? Yeah, and we always think about large centralized stovepipe manufacturing, if you will. But more and more, I think to your point, we are seeing, as you like to call it, the democratization of data. And, you know, thus supply chains even become more interdependent and complex and diverse. And that's the beauty when you start to talk about security. It's an absolute prerequisite to work in an ecosystem like that. Look, I know you are a passionate advocate for diversity, equity, and inclusion. Tell us a little bit about some of your activities here and how you weave this into your everyday leadership.
Yeah. Look, I will start with, I see diversity, equity, and inclusion as just a mandate for good business, making good business decisions. I think if you exclude any part of the population, you're sub-optimizing your potential, right? So think about women at the very highest level, the 50% on average of the population. If we don't have the 50% of the population at the table, then I think we're kind of not making good business decisions, right? So my point is, I start with, it's really important for the best minds to be sitting at the table where problems are solved and where value is created. And so in that vein, I also am very passionate about paying it forward and supporting groups that are underrepresented and feel that they need some additional support when they are the minority. I have been the only, in many rooms, in many customers, in many countries, over 30 years of my career in industrial. And so I want to help empower others to take that next step, to kind of have the courage, what they see as needing courage, to take a next step. And so I felt it's very important to be a role model in the sense of, if you can see it, you can be it, right? So pushing myself forward so others know what's possible. And at the very personal level, Ken, I have a 16-year-old daughter. I want her to know nothing is off limits for her, whatever her path is, right? So I'm very engaged with, you mentioned employee resource groups. So at Rockwell, I am the executive sponsor for the Asian Network in our Cleveland site, the Cultures Connected resource group, which is our diverse field employees in North America. And having been a salesperson in my prior company, understanding what that can be like and how to kind of help equip people with the tools they need and the confidence they need to keep pushing forward. And I've started these lean-in circles at Rockwell, which is really around taking a broad group of women, 10 to 15 women every year. We meet for a year to just really talk about things that are of interest to them and how to help them move forward. You know, how to challenge the status quo, how to have constructive conversations and not feel diminished or minimized. And so it's really important to me, and how I do it in my everyday work too, is I'm always asking, like, if we are working on a plan for a certain region, where are the people from that region? Who are the people that are closest to the customers? Are they at the table, right? Even if we're thinking about talent reviews, like challenging some of the biases that I may observe. And I'm not perfect. So I don't mean to say it like I'm somehow have a better opinion, but I think it's important to bring that perspective to the discussion.
I've heard you say at least twice in the conversation, pay it forward, which is, I think, is an absolutely great theme and probably very much describes your long-term vision, if you will, but also your leadership actions. And I think that's wonderful. In closing, I always like to ask, so where do you find your personal inspiration?
It's a great question. I had to think about this one. Look, as I mentioned earlier, I am a lifelong learner because I'm very curious. And I'm always hungry to learn what's new, what's exciting. What are the things that I can learn to strengthen how I can contribute and add value? And I would say, look, I think however many years I've been working for 30 years, I continue to move forward. And last month, I took a digital transformation course at Columbia University. And it was taught by David Rogers. And he was at that during that week launching his second book called The Digital Transformation Roadmap. And what I loved was not just like learning academically, but it was for other industry leaders as well, executives. And we could actually talk about his work in the context of how we were each facing, you know, whatever it was, challenges or opportunities in our companies. And it was global. So we had people from around the world and you know, coming away with basic learnings, right? So digital transformation is never done. It's not about technology. It's more about leadership, strategy, and transformation. And how do you think about, you know, nothing will work if you don't have an aligned shared vision up front. So it was just, I love to learn. So that was a great experience in terms of one, you know, in that experience too, I learned from leaders from Walmart, for example, how did they think about the digital transformation? So we had David Glick there from Walmart, or Chris LaSala, who's formerly of Google, and being able to ask questions and kind of exchange ideas. I find that inspiring and energizing. And then again, how do I then take all that learning and how do I apply it to the different parts of my life is exciting for me.
Oh, yes. I can tell just based on the passion of this conversation. I must admit this closing question I always enjoy because I'm also an avid reader and I tend to always put to the top of the list books, recommendations that come out and or podcasts, etc. So I'm not sure I'll be able to commute to a digital transformation session at Columbia, but I certainly will take a look at some of the proceeds coming out of that. So, Bina, I really appreciate your time. This has been a great conversation.
No, thank you so much, Ken. I really appreciate you taking the time. And, you know, if I think about one message to leave you with, you know, you referenced the paying it forward. I'm just excited because I think the best is yet to come in terms of what's possible.
I fully agree. And I think that's for Vina, for Rockwell Automation, and I think for the industrial automation industry, and certainly impacted and influenced by your past innovation experience at 3M. So I'm genuinely enjoying the journey so far, but looking forward to the future. So this has been Vina Lakundi, Senior Vice President, Strategy and Corporate Development at Rockwell Automation. Thank you for listening, and please join us for the next episode of our Digital Thread podcast series. We wish you a momentous day. You've been listening to the Momenta Digital Thread podcast series. We hope you've enjoyed the discussion, and as always, we welcome your comments and suggestions. Please check our website at momenta.one for archived versions of podcasts, as well as resources to help with your digital industry journey. Thank you for listening.